facing her. I could tell that her eyes were just wrong. She would stare and stare, then blink rapidly. It was hard to watch.
Jesse, she said. Tell me your name.
Jessica Tamarind Hauptmann,
Jesse said, her voice not quite right.
Jessica, said the queen. Isn't that a pretty name? Come sit at my feet, Jessica.
She looked at me and smiled as Jessie did as she was bid. The queen leaned forward to pat her head. Jessie seemed to appreciate it more than the witch had.
She is half mine already, the queen told me. Your young man Gabriel and I have already done this as well, haven't we?
Yes, my queen, he murmured tightly.
I haven't collared him because of our bargain, Mercedes Thompson. But while a human is in my presence, unless I suppress my magic, they belong to me. It was not smart of you to bring me another thrall.
She patted Jesse one last time, then sat back.
But that is not all you brought into my Elfame. Tell me, Mercedes, how is it that you managed to bring not only a fae, but a wolf with you when you were not to speak of this to them?
I gave her the short version. I taped our phone conversation.
I see.
She looked like she'd swallowed a lemon, but didn't complain.
So, Mercedes Thompson, you would cry bargain.
She smiled coolly.
You want to exchange the Silverborn for your life?
Ariana gave me a sharp look, but I knew how to listen. And I knew about fairy bargains that left you ruining the day you made them, even before I'd read Finn's book. If I wasn't really careful, I could bargain the book for my life and end up wishing myself dead. For instance, I could get out of here and be forced to leave Jesse and Gabriel behind. I don't know, I said, squirming under the weight of the fairy queen's gaze. I bit the inside of my lip until it bled, and it hurt, because human-shaped teeth aren't sharp enough to cut through skin easily. Samuel, I said, a kiss for courage and clear seeing, my love. Samuel turned to me, startled. A kiss was probably the last thing that he'd been thinking of. I stood on my tiptoes and damn near had to climb him to get to his mouth. I clamped my open lips to his and tried to get as much blood into his mouth as I could. After the barest instant, he seemed to understand what I was doing. He participated fully, licked my lip, and set me down gently. I hoped the blood would work as it had in the bookstore and that he saw what I did. It was hard to say from Samuel's reaction, but I thought it had. Maybe it wouldn't matter, but outside of the gun in my shoulder holster and the one in the small of Jesse's back, Samuel was our best weapon against the Fae. Maybe he was better than the guns, because he'd be a lot harder to stop. It couldn't hurt to have him know what he was fighting.
Very affecting, the queen said, sounding bored. Are you courageous and clear-sighted enough to give me the Silverborn yet?
That is not a bargain, I said, trying to keep her from seeing the blood on my mouth. It is an exchange. I would consider such an exchange only if my comrades are allowed to leave. It is having them leave here safely and soon that I'm interested in bargaining for.
A true bargain, she said. Do you play an instrument?
The piano and I have a hate-hate relationship. I didn't consider that playing, and I know my piano teacher hadn't either. No?
A different bargain, then. You hold something of my choosing while it changes. For each time it changes, I release one person.
She snapped her finger, and the witch muttered to herself, and the fae nearest us, a short and fine-boned creature with skin like a peach and pinkish-green hair, burst into flame. It wasn't glamour, because the room didn't change. They were real flames, even though they didn't seem to hurt the Fae.
She can't hold flame without dying, said Ariana.
She hadn't looked at Samuel or me since I kissed him. I don't know if she suspected something was up, or if she thought we were lovers.
And that breaks the heart of the bargain. It must be something that is possible, however unlikely, for the challenger to accomplish.
Fine, said the queen, if you are so particular, Silver, you may be the challenger.
She laughed, and the roots in the ceiling writhed as the sound of bells echoed in the room.
Of course I knew who you were, dear Silver. How could you think otherwise? Are there so many of us who chose to live so disfigured by the fangs of hounds and wolves? No, only Silver. So you may take this bargain, and the alternative is that I will kill this almost mortal woman who is not so human as your Finn or the boy. Half-blood is not human enough to be saved by the guesting laws of the Elfame.
Arianna didn't seem to hear the queen's taunts. Instead, she said clearly and slowly, I take hold of this fae, who will change. The first shape of fire counts as one. After that, for every time he changes, one of my comrades will go free. He will change 5 more times, 3 minutes each form, and if I succeed, all shall leave. If I don't, one leaves for each shape I hold. As she was talking, Arianna set Finn down next to Gabriel. Even under the queen's thrall, Gabriel put a hand on Finn's shoulder to steady him.
4 times, said the queen, 5 shapes. I will not let go of Mercedes Thompson, who holds a silver born.
It's all right, I told Arianna. I'm a survivor. Ask anyone. I can deal with the queen about the book when all of you are safe. 6 forms, said Arianna, 1 for each. It is in the rules. The bargain requested, all prisoners invested, in the outcome tested. The poetry didn't flow well, but I suppose that it didn't need to be very good poetry to record the rules of a fairy queen. The queen's eyes fluttered in irritation. I had a hard time not looking away or blinking too fast myself.
Agreed, she snarled. But Mercedes is the last to be freed, and your grandson first.
Samuel said,
Finn, Jesse, Gabriel, Arianna, me, and Mercedes, then. Finn, Arianna, then the rest, followed at the end by Mercedes, counter-offered the queen.
I saw what she was doing. By putting Arianna and Finn at the beginning, she thought she was reducing Arianna's motivation, even as the bargain became harder and harder to keep. Samuel shook his head.
Finn, Jesse, Gabriel, Arianna, me, and Mercedes. I am getting bored, said the queen. Agreed, the bargain is struck.
Arianna gave Samuel a narrow-eyed look. I think it was because he put her before him. But I agreed with him. Get the helpless ones out first, then those who could best protect themselves. That meant Arianna before Samuel. The bargain is accepted, agreed Arianna. And she stepped forward, embracing the flaming fae. As soon as she touched him, her hair burst into flame, as did her clothing, and what was not burnable dropped to the ground, including the stone Z had given her to hold. Its steady light was almost unnoticeable against the flames as the rest of Arianna smoldered a moment before lighting up as well.
She holds earth, air, fire, and water, Samuel told me.
If I hadn't known him as well as I did, I might have thought he was disinterested.
It is what made her able to do great magic after most of Underhill was out of reach. Magic fire will do her no harm.
The queen was speaking to the witch. After she was finished talking, the witch stood up, a steel knife in her hand. She gathered up her chains and moved to the farthest extent, which left her just able to reach the forest lord. She plunged the knife into the tree-like creature, and it bellowed, shook, and bled amber fluid onto the knife. The floor moved under my feet, and the ceiling roots contracted and wiggled. Samuel put a hand under my elbow to steady me, so I knew the blood had worked. He could see through the glamour to the reality of what we dealt with. The witch licked the knife and dipped a finger into the cut she'd made in the trapped fae. She used that finger to draw symbols that hung in the air where she'd put them and glowed a sickly yellow. She pulled up her shirt to expose the skin of her belly. Then she reached into the air and grabbed the symbols and slapped them onto her bare skin. When she was finished, she walked back to the throne, sat down, and finished cleaning the blade with her tongue. She caught me watching her and smiled. Maybe she didn't know about the glamour, or maybe she thought I was afraid of cats. One thing was for sure. She knew that I was scared of her. I wished I knew what she had done. Whatever it was unlikely to be helpful to us. And we needed help. 3 minutes times 6 is 18.
and Z had already been holding the entrance open for a while. Adding 18 minutes was going to push him well beyond the hour he'd promised. The Fairy Queen wouldn't need Z's opening to allow them to leave, but if it was still open, then they would walk out on the same day they'd entered. The time was up at last, and the Fae Ariana held turned to ice. 3 minutes is a long time to hold on to a giant ice cube. I couldn't understand why Ariana continued to hug him close instead of holding him more loosely so not as much of her was against him, especially as all of her clothes had burned away and she was naked with nothing between her and the ice.
"Flesh to flesh, remember," said the Fairy Queen in such a grumpy tone that I knew she'd hoped Ariana would back off.
I heard some murmurs from the Fae around us, remarking upon Ariana's scars. How ugly they were, how shameful. I thought they might be commenting on purpose, as some subterfuge of the Fairy Queen. But if so, their taunts seemed to have no effect I could see on Ariana. 3 minutes was up, and Jessie was safe, and the Fae Ariana was holding turned into smoke. She seemed to have been prepared for it, though, because as the ends of him started to dissolve, she reached out and snagged the cloak of the Fae who was nearest her. She wrapped the cloak around herself and the Fae, then touched the cloak with her cold hand, and a layer of ice covered it, trapping the smoke in the frozen cloth. Surreptitiously, I glanced around at the Fae who were in the room with us. There had been a few in the hall when we'd gotten here, but the others had entered more purposefully afterward, as if she'd summoned them all. I counted 28, not including the Forest Lord, who, I suspected, couldn't be numbered among her followers. I looked at their faces, and they seemed to be less blank than the thralls, but I didn't think that they were free agents either. Maybe it was the way all 28 stared hungrily at the Queen, as if they were waiting for any task, any order, anything at all that they could do for their true love whom they worshipped. I've been around the Fae. I've seldom seen any three of them see eye to eye on anything, let alone 28.
"Look at the scars her father gave her," said one.
"How could she live through that? It looks as though she's been mauled by beasts." "Don't you know the story?" said a third. They all looked at Ariana instead of the Fairy Queen as the third one continued. "Her father called his beast to torture her every morning for 3 years." Ariana's mouth tightened as she remembered too. And then that 3 minutes was up as well. She'd won freedom for Gabriel. The Fae under the cloak began to grow, and Ariana let the cloth fall to the ground. At first, I couldn't figure out the challenge. The creature had changed into another Fae, a large male with almost human features. His skin was the color and texture of a silver birch, some places smooth and white, and others rough and dark gray or black. His hair looked like shredded bark and hung around his face. He wasn't ugly or horrible. But then Ariana started to shake. Beside me, Samuel stiffened, a low growl beginning in his throat.
"Hello, daughter mine," the Fae man with bark skin said.
After that, he switched to Welsh. The accent was so obscure I couldn't tell what he said. He raised his right arm, and I saw that it had no hand on the end of it, and petted her hair with it. Ariana's father had been a forest lord, but evidently not the same kind of forest lord as the one the Fairy Queen held, because he looked quite a bit different. The Fairy Queen had been using her people to weaken Ariana for this moment, to remind her of what had been done to her by this man. But she had underestimated Ariana if she thought Ariana was going to lose this easily. Her arms tightened on the man and pulled him next to her. Samuel's Welsh, I could understand. He wasn't talking over the phone. He was speaking slowly, and what he said was pretty simple.
"He can't call his hounds, Ari, my love. Don't worry. They are dead and gone. I made sure of it. He's not real, not real. She doesn't have that kind of power. My Da, he killed yours. I killed the hounds, and they are not coming back."
Patiently, he kept up the refrain, giving her something to listen to other than the Fae, who evidently wore the face and form of her abusive father. I was watching the face of the witch, and I wasn't as certain as Samuel that her father wasn't real. Witches can do some very scary things. The first three things the Fae turned into, fire, ice, and smoke, those all smelled of Fae magic to me. This one, other than the scent he bore, which was his own, this one reeked of black magic, witches' magic, and witches could call back the dead. For 3 minutes, Ariana held the man who had been willing to torture her until she was mindless. At the end of the 3 minutes, she could have let go and walked out of the Elfheim, leaving Samuel and me to stand prisoner. She was tougher than that. So when her father turned into a snarling werewolf that bore more than a passing resemblance to Samuel, she went to her knees so she could pull him close and stared at Samuel. Her eyes grew black and her face went blank, but she held on, mouthing one word over and over. Samuel's name. Samuel went to his knees too, his eyes white and wild. "Not here," I told him, and it was my turn to talk. "You cannot change here, Samuel. You have to get her, Finn, and the kids out of here. You have to. She's not going to be in any shape to do anything. Hold on." She wasn't going to be able to free me. First her father, then werewolf, and I could take a pretty good guess at what the final shape would be, because the Fairy Queen had no intention of letting me go. She, who had been Daphne, thought I was the proper owner of the Silverborn. She thought that when she released Gabriel, our bargain about my safety would be over. Evidently, I wasn't human enough to benefit from the guesting laws that prevented a fairy queen from killing the humans who came into her realm. She could kill me and get the book. She'd have been right, had it not been for one thing. I didn't own the Silverborn. Finn did. When she killed me, all she'd get was a boatful of trouble, and I'd do my best to convince her of that once the others were free. All I'd have to do would be hold out until Adam came to get me. Of course, if Ariana managed to hold on to the last shape the Fae took, it would make my life a lot easier. For 3 minutes, Ariana held on to the werewolf, and then it changed. The hound looked a little like a giant beagle, white with brown spots, rounded ears that hung on either side of its face, but there was no sign of the friendly expression that most beagles live and die with. Ariana looked at the hound she held, her arms wrapped around its throat and her legs tucked almost under its body. For a moment, nothing happened, and despite myself, I felt a great leap of hope. I didn't want to be left alone with the Fairy Queen who wanted to kill me. Then Ariana rolled away from the hound, who must have looked like one of the hounds her father had tortured her with, and curled into a fetal position, her mouth open and screaming, but the sounds locked in by terror. Samuel picked her up and crooned to her, not saying anything, just giving her his voice. He hadn't forgotten who the enemy was, though. His eyes were on the Fairy Queen.
5, said the Fairy Queen, sounding moderately grumpy. "I thought I might get to keep you, werewolf, too, but she was stronger than I thought."
Samuel snarled at her. I noticed that Z's rock, lying on the ground under the belly of the hound who was focused on Ariana, was flickering. "Samuel," I told him urgently, "Z will be waiting. Get the kids, and Finn, too. Especially Finn." Any Fae willing to use a black witch and allow her to torture another being was not someone I wanted to give more power to. We needed to get Finn out of here and safe, so the Silverborn was out of her reach. "Take them and get out of here."
"Can't you help me up?"
Finn asked Gabriel. He knew what we needed. There was a momentary pause, but when the Queen didn't interfere with Finn's request, Gabriel helped him to his feet.
"You," said the Queen, pointing to the Fae nearest to her. "You take them to outside and let them leave. You'll have to carry the human man."
She looked at Jesse, then glanced at Gabriel.
"Go, children. And when you are outside my Elfheim, be thou as thou wert."
The Fae she'd pointed to bowed deeply and picked Finn up with the same ease that Ariana had displayed. Not all Fae are so strong. Silently, Jesse and Gabriel followed him when he started out the door. Samuel stopped and kissed my cheek, still holding Ariana, who was shivering in terror.
"Stay alive," he told me.
"Planning on it," I said. I gave Ariana, who was very deep into a panic attack, a wary look. I remembered her concern when she'd returned to herself last time, and so I added, "You stay alive, too. Now get out while the getting is good."
"Semper Fi,"
he said, glancing down at Z's rock. Then he hurried after the others. So far as I knew, Samuel had never been a Marine, but he'd known I'd catch the reference. The Marines never leave a man behind. He'd be back, and so would Adam. All I had to do was survive. We all waited until the Fae who had escorted them out returned. He bowed to the Queen and said,
"They are outside, safe and alive, my Queen."
I took a deep breath, and a few seconds later, Z Stone was just another gray rock among the roots in the floor of the cave. They'd made it with almost 2 minutes to spare by my rough count, though probably Z had held the opening until he saw them.
"My bargain is done," the Queen told me.
"Fine," I said.
"You will exchange the book for your life."
"Nope," I shook my head. "I've considered it and decided that it is not going to happen." There were no humans to protect anymore. Just me. Worry over what the witch might do if I freed her made me hesitate before I pulled my gun, and it was one hesitation too many. I reached under my T-shirt, and two of the Queen's people grabbed my arms. The gun fell on the ground, and the Fairy Queen kicked it aside, well out of the witch's reach.
"You misunderstand," she told me. "I will take your life, and you will give me the book with your death."
"I thought I had to own the book before that worked," I said in a puzzled voice. The Fairy Queen stared at me.
"Did you give the book to someone before you came down here?"
"Not the way you mean it," I answered.
"How would you mean it?"
she said softly. "Why would I answer that?" I asked. The Fairy Queen gave a sharp nod, and the witch reached out and touched me. I came back to myself, lying on the bed where Finn had been. At least it smelled like Finn, but the room was made of roots and dirt rather than marble. I was confused for a moment, but then I woke more fully and realized that I'd never seen it without the glamour, just smelled it. My whole body hurt, though I had no additional bruises. I'd held out as long as I could to give Samuel and Adam time to make everyone safe. I didn't know if it was long enough. I'd expected to be dead when it was over. But I could work with unexpected results, even if it involved using a chamber pot. That had to be what the white porcelain vessel under the other bed was. The Fairy Queen had a kitchen with fridges and everything and didn't have a bathroom. I considered it a minute and decided that maybe she just didn't have a bathroom for prisoners. After a very long time that was probably no more than an hour after I woke up, the door opened, and the Queen walked in with two female attendants and two male. The first man was the Fae who had seen Samuel and the rest out. He was tall, taller than Samuel, with seafoam eyes. For the first time, I realized he was the water Fae who'd broken into the bookstore. The second man was short by human standards, but not oddly so. His skin was green and rippled like the waves of an ocean at sea. Like the Fairy Queen, he had wings on his back, though his were grayish and leathery and less insect-like. One of the women was carrying a chair. She was nearly human in appearance, except that her eyes were orange and her skin pale, pale blue. The second woman was covered head to toe with sleek brown hair about 2 inches long, and her arms were a third again as long as they should have been. She was carrying a narrow silver ring just big enough to fit around my neck. At the sight of the silver ring, I tried to run. The tall man caught me and sat me in the chair while the woman who'd carried it in tied me into it, wrists, elbows, and ankles. Then they put the silver collar around my neck. "Once she has them in thrall, only she can release them."
"It took me too long to find your secrets, Mercedes," she said. "Finn was the owner, but Ariana has him safely guarded in the reservation where none of mine can get him. You gave it to your friend, but he has given it over to the werewolves, and we cannot go there either."
How long had I been out, and what had I told her? I didn't remember all of it, and that worried me. The Fairy Queen was wearing a different dress than she had been. This one was blue and gold. Did that mean it was a different day? Or just that she'd gotten things on her dress and had to change.
"They have left me only vengeance for now."
Her eyes gave that weird flutter.
"Eventually, they will not guard the Silverborn as diligently, and I will have it. Until then, I'll take what I can get. I hope you enjoy your victory. Mercedes Athena Thompson, she said, putting a hand on my forehead. Look at me.
The look at me part was inside my head. It reminded me of the way Mary Jo's voice had entered my head in the bowling alley. Maybe without that experience, the Queen's voice wouldn't have seemed so clearly foreign.
You want to serve me. Nothing else matters. Adam mattered.
If I didn't make it out of here alive, he'd think it was his fault. That if he'd been in better shape, I'd have brought him with me, and he'd have saved the day. He'd take responsibility for the world if someone like me wasn't around to shake him up. So I had to survive, because Adam mattered to me. The Fairy Queen had continued to talk in my head, but I wasn't paying attention to what she said.
"Whom do you serve?" she asked aloud, pulling her hand away from my head, not as though she were interested in the answer.
"Choose this day whom you will serve," I murmured, "but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." It seemed appropriate to quote Joshua at her.
"What?"
she asked, startled. "What were you expecting me to answer?" I asked, feeling a little let down. Some of the very old Fae react poorly to scripture, but this one didn't seem to mind. Not the scriptures, anyway.
"Bring her to the hall," she said, her eyelashes beating her cheekbones with the force of her temper.
The men picked me up, chair and all, and hauled me back to the hall. I had only vague memories of what had happened to me there at the hands of the witch. My mother once told me that childbirth was like that. All that pain, then nothing. But if my mind had blocked out the worst of it, my body seemed to make up for it. As we got closer and closer, my stomach clenched, and I broke out in a sweat. By the time we made it into the hall, I wouldn't have been surprised if the men carrying me could smell my fear. They brought me right up to the throne before setting me down.
"What did you do?" the queen hissed at the witch, who shrank back from her. "What did you do that she resists me?"
"Nothing, my queen," the witch said. "Nothing that would allow her to resist you. She is only half-human. Perhaps that is the problem."
The queen released her and stormed back to me. She took a silver knife out of her belt and cut my arm right over the bite Samuel had given me. The bite marks were still fresh-looking, so I hadn't lost a lot of time. She rubbed her fingers in my blood and put them in her mouth. Then she cut herself and dribbled 3 drops into the open wound on my arm. She was going to use old magic to bind us together. This was the stuff the wolves got out to make someone pack. I had a sudden panicky thought. If she got me, could she get to the pack through me? Z had been worried about her enthralling the wolves.
"My blood to yours," she said,
and it was too late to do anything about what she was doing.
"My silver, my magic, our blood makes you mine."
Because it was done. A fog rolled over my head. I struggled and struggled, but there was nothing to struggle against. It was only fog that seemed to cover everything and muffle my thoughts. Chapter 15. After struggling and struggling, I found myself alone, standing on a great barren field of snow. The cold was so great that it froze my nose when I breathed in, but although I was naked, I wasn't uncomfortable.
"Mercedes?" Bran's voice was breathless. "Here you are, finally."
I turned all around and couldn't see him.
"Mercedes," he told me, "I can talk to you because you are part of Adam's pack, and his pack is mine, too. But you need to listen, because I can't hear you. All I can do is show you what I think you need."
"All right," I told him. It felt lonely knowing he couldn't hear me. Lonely because it wasn't Adam who'd found me there in the snow. I shivered, though I still wasn't feeling the cold.
"The biggest weapon in the arsenal of a fairy queen is enthrallment. As a member of a pack, you should be all but immune to that. But yours is a special case, and I am told that no one thought to teach you how the pack magic should work for you. Apparently my son and Adam, who should know better, assumed that it would all be instinctive, because that's how it works for a wolf. When Adam found that it was not the case,
He chose to wait so he could find out who had been messing with you, instead of making you safe.
There were complications, I told him sharply. I didn't like to hear him being critical of Adam. I'd known what he was doing and approved of the way his mind worked. A pause followed, and I had the distinct impression of surprise.
I'm sorry for offending you, he said slowly. That I know you are offended is interesting.
I got the impression of a shrug, and he continued with his message.
You should know that thrall magic is not so different from the pack bonds, Mercedes. The pack bonds are not built to subdue individuality to the alpha or enforce behavior of any kind. A pack needs all its differences, and we find strength in that. A lot more strength than one stupid fairy queen who is stealing magic and using a witch, you understand me?
His fury shook my whole being, he was so angry. He wasn't angry with me, though, so it wasn't my concern. I understand, I told him, even though he couldn't hear me, or mostly couldn't hear me.
I'm going to show you something, he said.
And suddenly, in the white snow, there was a silver garland.
This is one of your pack bonds, he told me.
I couldn't see him, but I could feel him walking beside me as we followed the garland. We stopped by the end, and there was a rock tied, enveloped in a soft cage of silver. The rock glowed a warm yellow that was very welcome in this cold place.
Christmas garlands and a rock, he said, a smile in his voice. Why not an ornament?
Wolves aren't fragile, I told him. And they're stubborn and hard to move.
I guess that imagery works as well as anything, he allowed. Do you know who this is? Can you feel how worried she is for you?
Mary Jo, I said. And once he pointed it out to me, I could feel it too. Could feel that she was looking for me, running on 4 feet to use her nose to its best advantage. She wasn't hot on the trail, and I had the impression of miles traveled and miles to go stretching out both ways in weary infinity.
It is not usually so clear, Bran said, pulling me out of Mary Jo. Partially it is because I am with you, and I am the Marok. Another part is that the fairy has locked you into your own head. I can tell that by the quality of my contact with you. That she has done this is an unforgivable offense.
Once more I felt him try to contain his anger.
But that will give you strength here you would not otherwise have had.
He paused.
The connection between you and me is stronger than it should be, too. I'm not getting words back, but there is something. No use getting distracted with the why of that now. We have other tasks.
He took me to another silver garland and had me tell him whom it belonged to. After the third, I could find the strands myself without his guidance. The fourth was Paul's. He was running with Mary Jo and just as anxious to find me. He still didn't like Warren, though. I could see that his garland and Mary Jo's were intertwined and connected to all the other garlands, too. One by one, we walked by the rocks that were the wolves in the pack. Bran held me at Daryl's when I would have hurried on because I wanted to find Adam.
No, he said. I want you to look here for a bit. Can you find Daryl's connection to Arielle? It's different from the pack bonds.
I looked and looked. I found Arielle's rock nearby, but I couldn't see anything. Finally, in desperation, I picked up Daryl's rock and saw that it moved Arielle's too, as if they were tied together. And then I couldn't understand how I'd missed the blazing gold rope between them. It was so obvious. Maybe I'd been looking too hard for a silver garland, and instead their bond was very different, softer, stronger, and deeper. Unlike the pack bond, it wasn't tied onto the rocks. It originated in one and ended in the other. Bran took me by the elbow.
Okay, quit playing with them. You're making Daryl unhappy. I have another one to show you.
He led me to the center of all the strands of silver. All but buried in the pack magic was a very, very black rock. It radiated anger and fear and sorrow so strongly it was hard to go near it.
Don't be frightened, Bran said, and there was a rough affection in his voice. Adam has been frightening quite enough people lately.
Look and tell me what you see.
this was Adam. I ran up to the rock and put both hands on it. "He's hurt," I said, then corrected myself. "He's hurting."
"Where is your mate bond?"
It lay in the snow, a fragile and worn thing. There were a lot of places where it had been roughly knotted just to keep it together.
"Hastily made in need, which isn't necessarily a bad thing," the Maroc said. "But that was compounded by rough handling by a bunch of idiots, most of whom should have known better."
I could see that around the knotted places the rope was worn, as if a dog or a wolf had chewed on it until someone had tied it to keep it from breaking.
"Henry isn't in the pack anymore," said Bran, "just in case you hadn't noticed. I brought him to my pack for a little one-on-one. In a few months I might let him go out on his own again. Most of that mess is his doing."
But I wasn't worried about the chewed sections anymore. "It's broken," I said, kneeling in the deep snow. In front of me, the rope came to an abrupt ending, as if sliced by a sharp knife. I'd thought that the reason I hadn't been able to feel Adam was still the overload from when he'd thought I was dead. Though it had been recovering from that, hadn't it? When had I lost the connection? It hurt to know that it was broken.
"Now that," Bran growled, "was cut by black magic."
His voice was so strong in my right ear that I turned and got a glimpse of something huge and awful that didn't look anything at all like Bran in any form I'd ever seen.
"I couldn't see how it would be possible until Samuel told me there was a witch involved. Between the witch and the queen, they found a weakness and broke it," he told me.
And then, in a curiously amused tone, he said,
"And I don't scare you a bit, do I?"
"Why would I be afraid of you?" I asked. But my focus was on the broken rope. "Would I hurt Adam if I touched it?"
"Go ahead," said Bran. "He would give anything for you to touch it again."
"Mine," I said. "Mine." But I still didn't touch it. With that superior humor he occasionally used, which made me want to hit him every time, Bran said,
"I'm sure he can find someone else who wants it."
I grabbed it with both hands, and not because I was worried there would be someone else, no matter what Bran thought, but because we belonged together, Adam bound to me, me to him. I loved it when he let me make him laugh. He was a serious man by nature and weighed down by the responsibility he held. I knew he would never leave me, never let me down, because the man had never abandoned anything in his long life. If I hadn't taken the gold rope of our bond, I knew Adam would have sat on me and hogtied me with it. I liked that. A lot.
"Mercy!"
This voice wasn't Bran's. This voice was demanding and half-crazed. A short pause, then much more controlled, Adam said,
"About damn time. Found you. Mercy, we're coming to get you. Just sit tight."
I wrapped his voice around me and held on tighter to the rope between us until it settled into my bones and I didn't have to hold on any more. "Adam," I said happily, and then added, because he'd know I was teasing, "Took you long enough. You were waiting for me to get myself out?" I looked around my field of snow, by then littered with cheery garland and glowing rocks. I closed my eyes and wrapped the feel of pack around me like a warm cloak. I felt the Fairy Queen's magic touch the golden rope I shared with Adam, and this time it was the Queen's magic that shattered. My gaze was locked with that of the trapped forest lord. He blinked, and I jerked my eyes down, and saw that my arm was still dripping blood. From the amount I'd lost, I hadn't been out of it for more than a few seconds.
"There," said the Fairy Queen. "Now you are mine."
I blinked at her, and tried to mold my features into the stupid expression I'd seen on the other thralls as she cut the ropes that held me to the chair.
"Go to the kitchens and get something to wipe the blood off the floor," she told me.
I stood up and started walking. She quit paying attention to me, because I wasn't interesting anymore. I started walking a little faster, because I saw my gun on the floor by one of the benches where someone must have kicked it. I suppose that made sense. There weren't many Fae who could have picked it up without hurting themselves. None of the thralls would dream of using it. but I could see that the Fae might hesitate to have a thrall dispose of it. I picked it up and turned around, slowly, so as not to attract the attention of the Fae in the room, who were all looking at the Fairy Queen and not at her new thrall. The Queen was leaning over the arm of her throne, talking to her witch. I shot the Queen 3 times in the heart. The witch was watching me and smiled as I pulled the trigger.
"Huh,"
said a voice right next to me. I turned my head and had to look down at a human-seeming child who appeared to be no more than 8 or 9 years old. She smiled at me.
"And they were afraid something would happen to you if we waited until everyone could come to the party, just like a coyote to spoil the fun for everyone."
The last time I'd seen this Fae, she'd been playing with a yo-yo in the front yard of a murder scene she was guarding. I didn't know her name, just that she was plenty powerful. People were scared of her, and she was a lot older than she looked. For an instant, I almost saw something completely different standing beside me. Then she smiled at me and said,
"Not my glamour you don't, Mercedes."
The other Fae in the room didn't move, frozen in the moment of the Fairy Queen's death. Yo-Yo Girl walked forward to the dead queen, and I followed her. The witch had grabbed the body and was taking handfuls of the queen's blood and painting it over the silver thrall necklace around her neck.
"I don't think so," said Yo-Yo Girl.
She bent and touched the remains and said something that might have been a word. The queen's body turned to dust. Yo-Yo Girl started to back away and then saw the forest lord in his chains beyond the throne. Somehow, I don't think that she'd seen him before reducing the queen to so many ashes. The silver ring popped off the witch's neck, only to be replaced by small fingers. I heard only the echo of a whisper. Then the witch was dust, too. Yo-Yo Girl took a handful of the resultant gray mass, lifted it to her mouth, and licked it like an ice cream cone.
"Yum,"
she said to me. Her hands, her clothes, and her mouth were covered with ashes.
"I love witches."
"I'll take chocolate if it is all the same to you," I told her.
"Mercy," roared Adam from somewhere beyond the hall.
"Uh-oh," said Yo-Yo Girl. "Someone missed out on all the killing."
"Here," I called. "We're okay." And then it was true, because Adam was there, and he had his arms around me, and that made everything all right. I kicked the snow and stubbed my toe on the kitchen sink. It was the night of the big rescue, and everyone was partying over at Adam's house. I'd been hugged and fussed over until I decided that it was a good time to go check out the remains of my home. The snow hit a lot, and the pack had cleaned it up. They'd had the whole month that I'd been missing to do it. I suppose I was lucky it hadn't been a year or a century. They hadn't been able to find the Elfame after Z had been forced to let his door close. Apparently, as Z explained it to me, the Elfame moved in relation to the reservation, and Ariana hadn't been able to find me. It was only when the bond between Adam and me reconnected that they were able to locate the Elfame. While Z worked to make another entrance, they'd sent Yo-Yo Girl ahead to make sure I was safe. She apparently didn't need anything as crude as an entrance to find her way to the Elfame. She probably had a name besides Yo-Yo Girl, but the Fae are funny about names, and no one wanted to give her a real one. The Fae who had belonged to the Fairy Queen were being housed in the reservation temporarily. Some of them had no memory of how they'd come to follow the Fairy Queen. Some of them were angry that I'd killed her, but not so angry they'd made any move against me. Z said that the Grey Lords were torn between anger at the way the Fairy Queen had used a forest lord and a black witch, and triumph at the proof that Underhill was returning some power to all of the Fae. There wasn't much left of my trailer, except for a small pile of things that might be reused. I hadn't lost the pole barn with my Vanagon inside. I hadn't lost Medea or Samuel. The first time I'd seen the place, there had been a coyote hiding under the porch, and I'd taken it as an omen. When I'd finally bought it, I'd felt like I had a home for the first time in my life, a home no one could take away from me.
"Saying goodbye?"
I hadn't heard the Maroc, but Bran was like that.
"Yeah."
I smiled at him so he'd know I didn't mind his presence.
I meant to thank you for Samuel, Bran said.
I shook my head. It wasn't me. It was Arianna. Have you seen them together? Aren't they cute?
Arianna wasn't at Adam's house, though Samuel was. She wasn't quite up to bearing a pack of werewolves celebrating madly. Samuel had talked about her for 20 minutes, though. Arianna hadn't managed to touch Samuel when he was a wolf. Yet, Samuel had told me. But she didn't have any trouble with Samuel the man, and she didn't have panic attacks around any of the werewolves, as long as they were calm and approached her one at a time in human form. She just needed a reason to work on her phobias, he'd explained with great pride. Bran had smiled when Samuel said that. The smile that said the Maroc had been up to something. So he might have had something to do with her finding her way among the wolves. Or maybe he just wanted me to think that. I found that I do better when I don't worry too hard about what Bran can and can't do.
Arianna is a gift, said Bran. But if it hadn't been for what you did, Samuel wouldn't have been around to receive it.
That's what friends are for, I told him. Lift you when you're down and kick you in the rump when you need it. Adam helped. Speaking of friends, thank you for the Pack Magic 101 that kept me from being zombie Mercy.
He smiled, an expression that made him look about 16. If you didn't know him, it would be hard to believe that this young man with the diffident expression was the Maroc.
Did you get all of that? He asked. I wasn't sure how much made it through.
I looked at his innocent expression.
How much did you get back?
He gave me wide eyes, then grinned.
I think that we both were getting a bit of a boost from an interested party.
Who?
Z had no trouble freeing the forest lord from his chains. He's a charming fellow, by the way. Very gracious, as well as powerful. She kidnapped him from his own place in Northern California about a year and a half ago. His wife and family were very glad to hear that he'll be coming home soon. Daphne, the fairy queen, apparently visited the reservation and decided this would be a good place to roost. She enthralled a nasty witch and used her to grab the forest lord, because she didn't have enough power to enthrall him.
You think he helped us?
Someone did. I'd just about given up.
He looked around at the remnants of my home.
I have a more probable answer, but I'm having a little trouble wrapping my head around it. Have you decided what you are going to do with this yet?
It was insured, I told him. I might as well replace it.
Gabriel might need to live somewhere. He and Z had kept the shop going for the month I'd been missing. His mother wasn't happy with his doing that, so he was living at Adam's house. In the basement, as far from Jesse's bedroom as Adam could manage.
Look, said Bran, your oak tree didn't burn down.
Yeah, I said, pleased. Scorched a bit, but I think it'll be okay. I took a step toward it, and my foot caught something and moved it. I thought at first it was a broom handle, but when I bent down to retrieve it, it turned out to be my old friend the walking stick.
Ah, said Bran. I wondered where that had gotten off to.
I gave it a thoughtful look.
You've seen it?
It was sitting on the couch in Adam's basement, he said. When I picked it up, suddenly all my efforts bore fruit at last, and I found you among the pack bonds as if you had never been missing.
I gave him a wry smile.
It does seem to show up at interesting moments.
So, he said, have you given any thought to raising sheep?
Not at the present time, I replied dryly. No. We walked a little more in companionable silence.
I have some photos, Bran said abruptly, of Brian and Evelyn.
My werewolf foster family.
Some of your old school pictures, too, if you want them.
I'd like that, I said. He looked back toward Adam's house, and I saw that someone else was headed over.
Looks like you've been missed. I'll leave you alone.
He kissed my forehead and jogged off. He met Adam at the barbed wire fence, and Adam said something I couldn't quite hear that made Bran laugh.
Hey, I said as Adam approached me.
His response was a blast of warmth that had me blushing.
Do you have keys to your van?
He asked, his voice a dark caress that gave me goosebumps. He smelled of need and impatience.
They're in the van.
Good.
He said, taking my arm and walking briskly toward the pole barn that had survived the fire without a scorch mark.
If I had to go get my truck, someone might notice us leaving. I have keys to Warren's apartment.
He said the guest room has clean sheets.
He stopped at the van.
I need to drive.
Normally, I'd have argued with him just on general principle. But sometimes, especially with Adam so intense that he was ready to explode, it was just better to give alpha males their way. Without a word, I headed toward the passenger side of the van. He didn't speed, and he didn't talk. We made it to Richland without hitting a red light, but there, our luck ran out. Adam, I said gently, if you break my steering wheel, we'll have to walk the rest of the way to Warren's house. He loosened his hands, but didn't look at me. I put a hand on his thigh, and it vibrated under my palm.
If you want to make it to Warren's, he said, his voice almost guttural, you'll have to keep your hands to yourself.
There is something incredibly arousing about being wanted. I pulled my hand back and sucked in a deep breath. Adam, I said. The light turned green at last. I had the whimsical thought that my time in Elfame had completely skewed my internal clock, because I could have sworn we were there for hours instead of seconds. Warren lived in an A house, one of a group of alphabet houses built during World War II to accommodate the exploding population of nuclear industry workers in Richland. The one he lived in was still a duplex. Both sides were dark, and the other duplex had a for rent sign on the window. Adam parked the van and slid out without looking at me. He closed the door with exquisite gentleness that said a lot about his state of mind. I got out and didn't even bother to worry about whether my prized Vanakin Synchro was locked, which I suppose said equally as much about my state of mind. Adam unlocked the door of Warren's apartment and held it open for me. As soon as we were both inside, he closed the door and locked it. When he turned to face me, his eyes were bright gold and his cheeks were flushed.
If you don't want this,
he told me, as he had since the incident with Tim,
you can say no.
Race you to the bedroom, I said, and started for the stairs. He caught my arm in a very careful grip before I took more than two steps.
Running would not be a good idea right now.
He was ashamed of his lack of control. Maybe someone else would have missed it in his voice. Maybe I would have, too, if it weren't for the bond between us. I put my hand over his and patted it. Okay, I said. Why don't you take me to bed? I hadn't been ready for him to grab me and pick me up that fast, or I wouldn't have squeaked. He froze. Sorry, I said. I'm fine. He took me at my word and carried me to the stairs. I halfway expected him to run, but instead, his pace was deliberate, his step almost heavy. The stairs were narrow and steep, and he was careful not to bang my head or feet. He set me down just inside the guest bedroom and closed the door. He stood there, his back to me, breathing heavily.
A month, he said, and neither Z nor any of the Fae we knew could tell us if we'd ever get you back. Samuel's woman couldn't find you. Everything you had burned up in the fire. Neither the van nor the rabbit worked as a close enough tie. She tried to approach me to see if she could use me. But she couldn't even walk into the same room as me, not half-crazed as I was. Touching me was out of the question. I thought I had lost you.
I remembered feeling Mary Jo and Paul hunting me. You looked for me.
We did,
he agreed. Abruptly, he turned and hauled me against him. He was shaking, and he hid his face in my hair. It was useless if he was trying to prevent me from understanding what he was feeling. I had a technicolor view through our bond. I hugged him as hard as I could so he'd know I was real, that I didn't mind him holding me hard. I'm here, I said.
I couldn't find you either,
he told me, his voice a bare whisper.
Our bond was broken, and I couldn't tell if you'd done it on purpose, or if the Queen had managed it, or if you were dead. We could feel you in the pack bonds, but that's been known to happen when people die. Brand came, and he couldn't find you either. Then yesterday, Daryl was feeding us lunch and dropped the pan on the floor.
I'd heard about that already from various people, but I didn't interrupt.
Daryl thought someone was messing with Aurelie and stormed halfway up the stairs, only to be met by Aurelie, who was worried about him for the same reason. That's when Bran came up from the basement and said...
He stopped speaking. He said, I've done the hard part, Alpha. Now tell us where your mate is, I said. And he was holding the walking stick in his hand.
And there you were, Adam told me, inside of me, just where you belonged.
He drew back, moving his hands to my cheeks. The heat of his skin felt precious to me, his hot amber eyes feeding the fires in my heart and my body. His nostrils flared like a stallion scenting a mare. His hands dropped to my coat, and he ripped it down the back and threw it on the floor before backing away from me.
"Damn it," he said gruffly, his head against the door. "Damn it, I can't do this."
I pulled my shirt over my head and stripped off my jeans and underwear. Warren didn't keep his house at 70 degrees, since he was mostly sleeping at Kyle's these days. But I didn't feel the cold, not while I could feel the force of Adam's need roaring like a welding torch. "What can't you do?" I asked gently, pulling back the bedding and lying down on the sheets.
"Can't be gentle. I know. I know you need care, and I can't do that right now."
He pulled open the door.
"I've got to go. I'll send—"
"If you leave me naked and waiting on the bed without making love to me, I'll—" I didn't get to finish the threat. I think it was the word naked, though maybe it was bed. But before I finished my sentence, he was on me. He was right. He wasn't gentle. Up until that point in our relationship, our lovemaking had been passion tempered with humor and sweetness. I'd been hurt, and he'd been so careful of me. In the darkness of Warren's guest bedroom, sweetness and humor had no place in him. And though there was care in his touch, he was anything but careful. Not that he hurt me, quite the contrary. But he was fire and need that went so far beyond simple desire that it consumed me. And like the phoenix, I found myself reborn in the crucible. I met his urgency with my own, digging my fingers into the silk-covered stone of his arms as his sinful mouth tasted my skin wherever it fell. He was hot and hard, his need forcing me to rise to meet his fire with my own. Sweat dripped onto my skin, and the scent of it was an aphrodisiac because it was all Adam. If he needed me, I needed him every bit as much. He rose over me, closing his golden eyes as he pushed through me, into me, became a part of me with one heavy thrust. Only when he was all the way in did he look at me again, and in that look was triumph and a claiming so basic that it should have scared me.
"Mine,"
he said, rocking his hips against my own in a move that was more about possession than passion. I raised my chin and held his eyes in a challenge only I could make without consequences. I tightened my belly and dug my heels into the mattress to give my own thrust power. "Mine," I said. Adam's wolf smiled at me and nipped my shoulder.
"I can live with that," he said.
And then he demonstrated what that possession would mean when it involved an alpha werewolf who knew how to be patient and thorough when hunting coyotes. I dreamed I walked in the snow, but I wasn't afraid. There was a thick golden rope wrapped securely around me. It was free of fray or knot, and led me into the forest, lighting my way with its bright warmth. I followed it with a light heart and the humming anticipation of finding something wonderful. At last I came to the end of the rope, and a blue-gray wolf with golden eyes. "Hello, Adam," I told him.
"Shh," said Adam sleepily.
He pulled me tighter against him and rolled over the top of me as if that would make me be quiet.
"Sleep."
My body was tired. I was warm and safe. A return to sleep should have come easily, especially since I'd awakened from such a good dream. But it had reminded me of what it had felt like to be lost. "I couldn't find you either," I told Adam, burrowing against him. He was thinner than he'd been the last time I'd been in bed with him. The fire had left no scars, and he kept his hair short anyway, but the ribs I could feel told me I had cost him. "I quit trying," I admitted. "I was so afraid she was going to use me to enthrall the whole pack. I didn't understand that she couldn't do that. That she didn't have the power." I closed my eyes and let myself remember how terrified I had been. I opened them again almost immediately, needing to see him to feel safe. In that place, it felt like she had all the power to do anything. He was so still that I thought he might have gone back to sleep until he spoke.
She hurt you.
It wasn't a question. She did. I wouldn't lie to him. But it was just pain, not